Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everybody, to the Buck Sexton Show. On this episode, we have our friend Chadwick Moore. He is a contributing editor at The Spectator. He is a New Yorker man who knows a thing about some stuff, or stuff about some things. Chad, good to see you.
Hey, Buck. Great to be here.
All right, man. Let's get into this first off. You wrote a book, So You've Been Sent to Diversity Training. I got to wonder, yes. First of all, have you ever had to go through diversity training? Because I have at many levels. Yes, in college, then in the federal government, then local government, the NYPD, and then, you know, a little bit on the corporate side, not as much. So tell me about this.
Oh, I should have interviewed you for the book. Yeah. I did go to a 4-year public university. So that was 4 years of diversity training, even, you know, however long ago it was I graduated. I've been so removed from the corporate world my whole life. That was sort of on purpose. I wanted to design my life so I never had to go into an office. So I was really fascinated about what was happening in corporate America, because I think corporate America is sort of interesting in all of its mundane actions. And I did go to diversity training when I was writing for magazines, other liberal magazines. I went to an NYPD diversity training seminar, which I included in the book and wrote about that.
I've had to go to one of those because I worked in the Intel division, but keep going.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you know what it was about. Oh, yeah. That was a really fun and interesting experience. But also that diversity training I went to was in 2015, and it was before the summer of our Floyd, which of course, across the spectrum, both in private and in the public sector, diversity training took a really nasty, hateful, and very racialized take after the riots of summer 2020 and after George Floyd's death. So a lot of the stuff in the book is, I was talking to people during this time or immediately right afterwards. So they were noticing how things had changed and how HR had sort of ramped up the really sort of grotesque racial rhetoric that has no place in, well, anywhere in society, but especially on the job and in the public sector.
So what'd you find? You wrote this book, you researched the book. It's worse than you thought, right? That's I have a feeling we're going in that direction.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I like to have fun. So I knew this would be a fun thing to write about, to talk about. And I wanted to mock these people. I wanted to talk about the ridiculousness, and I wanted to get everyday people's perspective. So I talked to guys on oil rigs. I talked to police officers. I talked to guys in the military, talked to people who work on, you know, retail sales floors, IT directors, so all walks of life across the economy, and just sort of wanted to know, like, what's your experience with diversity training? What do you think is going on here? And a lot of people were, you know, we're so, it's such a part of our society now. At first they would sort of say, like, well, I don't really know why you care about this stuff. You know, here's what happened. Here's what I experienced. And the more they thought about it, the more they remembered, the more they talked about it, the kind of more disturbed they got by what they'd sort of been forced to sit through. And but my favorite was this guy who I called Jeremy. Of course, nobody I interviewed wanted to be identified by name because they're all scared of being fired from their jobs if they speak about these things. But he worked on an oil rig. He works on an oil rig off of the coast of Newfoundland in Canada in the Atlantic Ocean. And the first thing he says to me is, I said, so tell me about what's happening on the job with the diversity training. He said, well, just yesterday we had pink shirt day on the rig. And I'm like, excuse me? Yeah, all these guys in the oil rig had to wear pink shirts for some diversity cause. And this was during COVID. So they handed out pink face masks. And then they had to take pictures of everyone in the pink shirts to send it to corporate because corporate, you know, it's the oil industry. So, of course, they're in the crosshairs of Canada's Liberal government. The resources minister of Canada is from that area. So he's the representative from Newfoundland. So they really got to, like, you know, cozy up the way that the oil industry in particular, and I documented this not just in Canada, but around the world. One way the oil industry is cozying up to Liberal governments is through this diversity stuff. You know, there's gay pride is very big in the oil industry for these guys on oil rigs. They have to wear gay pride t-shirts in June and take a photo. The Canadian resource minister who I just spoke about, this guy is in charge of course, handing out all the drilling contracts. He's openly gay and it's a big deal for him. So when you start looking at things like that, that's just one example. You start to see really what corporate America gets out of all this stuff. You know, we talk about like, why is corporate America so woke? Obviously, like the C-suite executives are probably conservative. They're probably conservative people, but yet they let their corporations go so completely blindly woke. And then you start looking more into the political favors they're trying to gain from it. And it starts to make a lot more sense.
You know, Chad, of course, to detriment. From what I've seen in the corporate world and also in the administrative upper echelons and academia and even within the federal government, you know, certainly there are many different levels of why the politically correct pressure, wokeness, whatever people want to call it, why it is so powerful. And one of them is that it's really the only way, like once one person on, let's say, the board of a company is a racial Marxist, let's say, or a gender Marxist, a woke person, everybody else on that board lives in fear because that person wields a certain power that can destroy the reputation and possibly career of everybody else around them. Just by that's the power that is wielded in these rooms. So yeah, you know, the CEO maybe is a capitalist, let's just say. And in some of these places, that's not even really the case. But the CEO may be a capitalist. But if his chief marketing officer and certainly chief of, you know, diversity decides that that CEO is insufficiently devoted to the cause, can go to the board and say, you guys either get rid of the CEO or you're all racist, bigoted and in on it, too. Right. And it's very hard to get, for a lot of these places, it's actually hard to get fired. The only way you get fired is by upsetting DEI in HR.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if there's one thing that top executives never, ever want, it's to be the subject of a Twitter mob or to have their face in the paper, unless it's, of course, some fluffy business article praising them for great leadership. So they will do anything to avoid that sort of attention. It doesn't matter if they're what their political persuasions are. But you're right when you mentioned that one person on the board, because that's just sort of a microcosm for our society that we're living in anyway, where there's the tiny, tiny, vocal, but absolutely terrifying minority that has nothing better to do and basically nothing better to live for than to take on these causes because it somehow feeds them or makes them feel worthwhile or gives their life meaning or whatever. And they have turned it into absolutely a religion and a belief that they enforce with religious fervor, which of course means that anything they do is justified means to the ends. And they have no problems whatsoever destroying people's lives and going scorched earth for their very strange, newfangled social religion.
Yeah, I'm fond of reminding people that in the Russian, you know, civil war, in the beginning of the Soviet Union, you know, there were the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. The Bolsheviks took on the name majoritarians, essentially, even though they never represented any majority of any part of the society, really. In fact, the Mensheviks would have had more popular support if anyone actually looked at what was going on in the country at the time. But they called themselves the majority. And then they were just the most committed, ruthless, insane radicals and essentially ate all the other fish in the aquarium. That is how this stuff plays out. That's how it works. Like, it's not actually, I think people sometimes confuse political, even in the corporate world, political power with the agreement or even a majority agreement of everybody involved. Like, you have a couple of committed leftist Marxist types in the upper echelons of a university, of a corporation, and they can turn the whole place upside down. That's the actual reality, I think, that people see. And also, DEI side, you know, they're hiring and hiring based upon these very explicit criteria of, you know, gender and identity diversity and racial diversity, all these different things. Well, that has an effect too, right? I mean, the CEOs of these companies, whether it's, you know, Twitter or Disney, are scared of the 25-year-olds, you know, threatening to stage some kind of a walkout and create bad press. I mean, the 25-year-olds who work for them.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they are. Yeah, it's the insane bratty children who are running the asylum. And you know, I remember this back when I was working in liberal media, and it was, you know, the older editors who were maybe a few years older than me were very liberal, but not insane and definitely not woke, and would certainly support having a more conservative view in their publications, or at least, you know, willing to do that. And things I would write that were maybe more conservative, they defended, but you would see the 25-year-olds in the office literally signing online petitions against, publicly against their employers, saying that they don't support this and this is hateful and blah, 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 blah. And it's just so astounding to me. I could never imagine going against your boss like that, even if you disagree. But these young people have absolutely no qualms because they know they have the mob to back them up. And back to what you're mentioning earlier, not just with Russia. I mean, it's as far as I know, your background in this is much better than mine. Almost every time there's been some sort of violent, sudden, revolutionary Marxist takeover of any country, it's always been that tiny percent.
Yes.
Then pretends that they're a majority.
Correct.
Every single time.
That is, you're 100% correct. That is the playbook. These extreme, and they try to co-opt other groups who are more moderate in the beginning. They say, yeah, this is about the people and the workers. And then it's, you do what we say, we control everything, or we'll line you up against the wall and shoot you. That's always the way that this stuff actually goes. But, you know, power to the people,
yep.
Sure. I want to ask you, Chad, about the activist LGBT Q community and the gay community specifically, and how this drag queen story hour for kids thing is somehow always being turned into the struggle for, like, by Democrats and by activists, that they always compare this to, like, the struggle for gay rights. And I want your take on this in just a second. We'll get into this. Okay, friends, I want to prepare you because things are going to get rough out there in the economy. The recent bank failures are the nation's largest collapse of a financial institution since 2008. $200 billion plus was held just in Silicon Valley Bank. So you know you can get rocked right now. And who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. So if you've been on the fence about buying gold and silver, now is the time to make that call and to take action. Gold and silver can be a protection for your portfolio, but can also be used as currency. And we could use them for currency at some point. Why not just have a little gold and silver on hand in case and protect your portfolio? I've got gold and silver here at home. Now is the time to call the Oxford Gold Group. Hear what they have to say. The phone call is free. That's who I get my gold and silver from. Securing your IRA or 401k with real gold and silver is a portfolio protection plan, and Oxford Gold has made it as easy as 1, 2, 3. One app, one call, and you pick your precious metals. That's it. You now own real precious metals just like I do. Mine came from the Oxford Gold Group, like I said, years ago. So I've done really well. I'm going to keep doing well. Call the Oxford Gold Group today about our additional free bonus opportunities you could be eligible for. 833-404-GOLD. Get some gold and silver today. You know, inflation, gold and silver, you want to hedge? 833-404-GOLD. All right, Chad, explain this to me. As a gay man, what is the response of the majority, would you say, of your friends who are also from the LGBTQ community when you have Joe Biden say, you know what we have to do about transgender surgery for kids? We have to, you know, do a thing like we did for marriage equality. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, a 13-year-old having puberty blockers and a double mastectomy because she thinks that she's actually a man is a very different thing than two consenting adults who want to get married. I mean, I think whatever one thing, I think that's pretty straightforward, but there's always this effort to connect these things.
Yeah. So the reaction of the gays, you know, publicly is obviously petrified silence because, of course, they're terrified of saying anything that goes against, once again, that vocal minority we were just discussing. But privately, it's horrifying. Any normal, sane person, and of course, there are plenty, not all, but plenty of normal, sane gay people, would look at this on so many levels as the disgusting Joseph Mengele level experiment that it is on children, this transgender mutilating of kids. One thing, though, that is sort of particular to the gays that they rarely, almost never would say in public, but absolutely 100% say in private, is this looks like conversion therapy. It looks like medicalized conversion therapy. I think you see a lot of gay people saying, like, you know, I was maybe a more effeminate little boy, or maybe I was a more butch little girl, like a little tomboy. And what if I had had some Harvard professor parents that said, well, you know, you can be a boy or you can be the other sex if you actually want. You might actually be that. How would I have reacted? I probably would have said, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Yes, let's do it. And then absolutely, you know, signed yourself up for a life of medical dependency and mutilation and sterility and everything that comes with that and psychological care. So it's really scary and disgusting on that end. You know, another thing that's interesting is the country in the world that performs the most sex change operations, well, the second most, the first is Thailand. The country that performs the second most sex change operations is Iran, where, of course, it's illegal to be gay. They will kill you. And the reason for that is the government pays for sex change operations because they look at it as a cure for your homosexuality. So that's interesting when we're thinking about what's happening here. With the left, with this whole, it's so bizarre because the people who are pushing this stuff, it's mostly trans, old trans activists who started too late, so they don't quite look the way they think that they should look, think that if they had just started as children, their lives would be perfect. And then you have straight people, and particularly straight liberal moms that are really pushing this. It's almost like they want a little transgender pet that they can show off at cocktail parties. They want to feel special and unique and diverse by having this in their family. Maybe it's like a kind of Munchausen syndrome by proxy. I don't know. But you have these parents who are pushing this, and it's so pathetic and so strange. And you see these moms taking their kids to drag shows like they believe it. And I truly think that they believe it's some sort of civil rights crusade that they're embarking on by taking their children, their toddlers, to see half-naked gay clowns dancing around to pop music. They almost think like they're marching on Selma or something. It's super strange, but the only thing that does, same with the trans stuff, the drag queen story hour, it hurts gay rights, it hurts gay people. You might have very conservative people who have no problem with gays. They got a gay neighbor, a gay hairdresser, who knows? No problem, live and let live attitude. But then you have this being forced upon society, and this becomes a face of gay now. You have to bring your kids to a drag show. And no one can support that. It actually creates more discord and more hatred, if there is any, towards the gay community.
It's a truly bizarre and sick situation. I also think it's interesting that, like so many arguments made by the left and by the activist class of the left, they went from this isn't really happening, why are you so focused on it, to now it's all over the place. I mean, the attorney general for the state of New York, Letitia James, is sponsoring a drag queen story hour for children, right? Yeah. Okay, so we're way past this. Oh, why are you talking about it? It's not really a thing. No, they've made this a thing, and you know, if a normal like day, you know, if a 35-year-old woman wanted to wear fishnets and a thong and shake her butt in front of 5-year-olds. Literally, as we see in these videos and things, like 4 or 5-year-olds with their parents, you know, there, I would think there was something deeply wrong with that woman. A man with, like, you know, is I mean, with the fishnets and, like, you know, the man thighs and everything else, shaking his behind in front of small children, like, this is grotesque. And yet, If you have any, you know, Antifa has started showing up protecting these things as well. I mean, this has become a central cause for the left. And what's amazing is that if you take it all the way up to the White House level, I mean, Joe Biden, Mr. like, I'm a union guy from Delaware, centrist, moderate Democrat grandpa, which is all bull crap. But that was the whole branding pitch. He's on board with drag queen story hour for kids and for drag shows for children.
Yeah. And I keep finding myself thinking, you know, like I love drag as adult nightlife entertainment. You know, I love the campiness, and I love, you know, the ribaldry, and I do think that you do have some talented drag queens out there.
I know a lot of straight guys who really enjoy going to what they might call cabaret with ladies that are not really much in clothing on and who dance. Sometimes people put dollar bills, but they're adults.
Right, of course. I never thought I'd see either of these things in my lifetime. This bringing children into it is so sick and weird. I tried to grapple with, like, who are these drag queens that are doing this that would actually perform in front of children? And the best thing I can come up with is, I mean, firstly, if you watch the videos and you know anything about drag, like, they're not the top of the totem pole when it comes to talent. They're kind of like the lower, like, booger drag queens. So there's that. They're probably really poor. They're probably like, oh, I need $50 and this library is going to pay me to show up. They're probably extremely low IQ. They're not very smart people. But also in their mind, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and say that they're not all pedophiles. And I know that a lot on the right, it's this whole rhetoric against grooming, which is, you know, a very real thing, especially we see a lot of teachers. I have to believe that they're not all pedophiles and they're just sort of stupid and poor. And also I would think that they have some thing in the back of their mind where they think that there's some gay kid in the room that's going to see them and then feel more comfortable. So they think they're doing some sort of good service. Or they also justify it on the grounds of, well, I'm sort of dressed like Beyonce would be dressed and they probably see Beyonce doing this on TV, so it's fine. That doesn't excuse any of it. It's grotesque and children shouldn't even be seeing Beyonce doing that. But I struggle to understand why anyone would sign up to perform for children in that manner.
I get
the parents who are doing this. But I understand their psychology and I think they're pathetic for it. But
if the response to this was, you know, from the activists and the left and whatever was, all right, fine. You know, no more with the kids. We're just going to do. No one's complaining about drag shows for adults. That's like not even a thing. Yeah. And they like to pretend that it's anti-LGBTQ and anti-trans and anti. There is nobody on the right who is making noise because we weren't making noise about drag shows, you know, the last 20 years. Nobody cares. Fine. Some people like it. Some people go to it. That's fine. They're adults. For children. Yeah. We're talking about for kids. And what's interesting is that they double down on it. You know, even now it has been called out, they're saying, no, this is, the attorney general for New York State, right? I mean, this is not some fringe political figure. It's crazy what's going on. Go ahead.
I think I lost my train of thought. Well, in the same vein also, they absolutely love it. They absolutely love it because they can cry hatred and oppression. You know, now it's, you see like, what's that show? RuPaul's Drag Race. I haven't watched in a long time, but you know, all their posts are like, drag is under attack now in this country. It's like, no, it's not. It's just the children. But they love this because they desperately need fundraising. They desperately need things
they need issues. They need things that they can say issues. And they can they claim victim issues. Status. And yes. But what I was going to say is, you know, the same thing kind of happens with the books that are in some of the kids' libraries. They always say the Ron DeSantis, for example, in Florida is banning books. Yeah. That's just a lie. It would be like saying we're trying to talk about banning drag. No one's trying to ban drag shows. It's about the appropriateness of content for children. And did you see that he did it was brilliant. Ron DeSantis did a press conference. They started to put up on the screen photos of some of the books that were being given to these kids from their school sharing wall, library, whatever they have. And it was so pornographic that the news cameras had to turn off.
Oh, yeah. The left crying about book burning is my favorite thing ever. They're suddenly care about speech when it's pornographic graphic novels for 5 years old. Oh, now they care about speech. But don't you dare crack a joke on Twitter because then you deserve what you're getting as well as to be fired from your job. Just wonderful. Just wonderful. And I remember the left, this whole recent spate of banning books in schools started with the left, I believe, and it was books like Huck Finn and these American classics that use words that are now outdated.
Well, now they're editing them after the fact, as you know. They're going back, they're changing Roald Dahl, they're changing Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain. They're changing these different authors. You mentioned something, by the way, joke on Twitter. Not seeing a lot of Chad, for those of you who don't know, used to throw fiery bombs all over the place on Twitter. We're not seeing as much these days. I want to ask what's going on there. But I've got to switch gears for a moment here for a word from our sponsor, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Tunnel to Towers Foundation does amazing and incredibly important work. They honor fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. This coming Memorial Day, all of the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the War on Terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony in our nation's capital. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation is educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. All right, chat. Back to Twitter for a second here.
Yeah.
Where you been, buddy? You're not really throwing down anymore. What's going on?
I'm not, man. You know what I mean? Okay, well, I'm on book leave. I'm writing another book, which has been insane. I don't think I can really talk about what it's about, but at the same time, I've just been so burned out on social media. You know, I realized, Buck, I'll tell you what I've realized. I'm almost 40, and I realized that I never really enjoyed it. And I always felt like I just really had to be out. Also, I'm an emotional tweeter, so like I just bang things out when I'm feeling it in the moment. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't give a shit. I don't know if I can cuss on here. I don't care. And, you know, I'm just like, I don't want to read these replies, whatever. I'm also kind of, I'm taking the approach of embracing boomer media. I just love books and magazines and TV and radio. I mean, what can I say? I'm doubling down on old media. That's what I'm thinking. And social media, it's, Elon Musk obviously has done a better service to this country than any politician has in I don't know how many years by purchasing Twitter. If he stands by everything that he's been doing,
it was a totally rigged game, that it was this playground of left wing ideological bias always and, right. and at all times. But I also feel like there are so many of these platforms now, and everyone you're all sort of disaggregated. I mean, are you going to be posting on TikTok? This is why people tell me, like, you should post more on Instagram. I'm like, what? I'm doing 3 hours of radio a day. I got to prep for that show. I'm writing a book actually, so I can't talk about it either. But I got a book underway. I got things. I'm gonna be taking photos of what? My breakfast? Like I'm not delusional. I'm not sitting here taking all these like selfies. Like, hey everybody, like check me out. So Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook. By the way, what is Facebook anymore? I haven't been on my personal Facebook account in like 6 years at this point.
Oh yeah, I mean, who's still on there? I have to go on there occasionally for a client and like check the Facebook, and I'm just like, what is going on here? Who even runs it? Who's looking at this stuff? It's so bizarre. Just even logging.
But what do you think happens? I mean, do you think are we going to have more of a consolidation in? It's funny because they keep saying they're going to ban TikTok. This is what they're always talking about. I don't understand. I feel like we should be able to figure out a way where the data is stored on U.S. servers. The Chinese don't have access to it, you know, full stop. And there's full transparency. Like everyone keeps saying, oh, they're going to program our kids and Beijing's going to see all this. And I'm like, do you guys know what our kids are being programmed with anyway? I mean, like, I don't really see the argument if you can create some stopgap where, yeah, I mean, we don't want all this data sitting on servers in Beijing or whatever. It would be very easy if it was on U.S. servers to know if Chinese were accessing this in any meaningful way. But I think there's like 100 million people on TikTok or something now in the U.S. I mean, it's some crazy high number, much higher than I thought. Young people are all on it and we're going to get rid of it. And I'm sitting here saying, so what is that? What's left at that point? I mean, Twitter's got some problems. I love what Elon's trying to do, but it's just technologically got issues right now.
I don't know. I mean, I think we're like, is TikTok just going to disappear overnight the way that, I don't know, is Snapchat still around?
Friendster?
I feel like nobody...
Snapchat is still a thing. Snapchat is still a thing.
Okay, I didn't even know Snapchat was still a thing, but I remembered it was the thing.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. even if you don't think you qualify. It pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I always knew Snapchat was going to fall apart because this whole thing about like putting like cat ears on yourself. Once you're older, by the way, I use this even back when I was a single man, you know, and you would see like people's on their Instagram, their photos, and some of them would use their Snapchat stuff on it, you know, where they have like the, you know, the dog nose or the cat ears or whatever. I'm like, you're 28, 29 years. You're out. You know, you're out of the running. Like,
oh,
no
totally.
One looks
red,
good
yeah,
with
like
fake
flag,
body.
Red flag.
Yeah, if you're 12 years old, you could have your little cat filter from Snapchat. But, you know, once you right. get to be an adult, there's... So I always thought that Snapchat was preposterous. And oh, the other thing, too, is I was like, hey, this... It all disappears. It's the internet. It doesn't disappear. It goes right. somewhere. They have whatever you're sending, it goes somewhere. So that was the other part of this. It was like, oh, people were like, you can just send whatever photos. I want to be like, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, don't worry. It's going to be totally gone. No one's storing it somewhere in a BlackBerry later.
So, yeah. No, I wonder, you know, I feel like we've had, in some ways, it's almost like we finally broke into the party here. You know, we finally got past the bouncers for social media on the right after being really shut out for the last few years. And this party's looking kind of dead right now. There's not a lot going on. The kegs are running dry.
Yeah.
You know, they've switched from the live band to like the, you know, the schlumpy DJ. It's not good.
It's true. And maybe a part of that is that the left is more, they're not as fun right now because they're subdued because they got their guy in office, but also they're seeing how crazy and insane everything is. So they don't have that fervor they did during the Trump years, which made it so fun to torment them and see what sort of crazy things they're saying. Maybe if we have a Republican president after this one, then the left will get newly entertaining and social media will be great again. But
did you get some Trump retweets back in the day?
No, I never got a Trump retweet. I was so upset by that.
So I'll just tell you, this was the I got six Trump retweets in a row once. So it was like my Trump's Twitter feed was just Buck Sexton. And it was funny because I remember I got like weird text messages from people who I don't know from work anymore, you know, from media world anymore, or whatever, like high school classmates were like, hey, man, like, I guess the big guy really like, you know, and I was sitting here, I was like, what is this? But the best part of it was that that was the high point of Twitter in a lot of ways, even though the left was cheating and doing all kinds of stuff and they used it to steal the election. And that's a whole other conversation. But one of the high points of it was that if you got in the Trump, even if you didn't get a retweet from him, but if you just kind of got into that like Trump hashtag world, all of a sudden some like third tier actor from like 1994 that you saw in some B action movie would be like talking smack to you. You're like, wait, you how did this happen? Like one of the guys from one of those SVU shows was like, yeah, like maybe if you actually loved your country, bub. And I'm like, wait, what? I was like, aren't you like detective, you know, Spicoli or something? Like what? Like, how did this happen?
I remember when I got like a retweet or a follow from not a mean one, but a nice one. I guess it went from Cato Kalin.
Oh yeah.
Remember from the OJ trial.
Oh, Cato Kalin is awesome, man. He loves my Twitter.
Cato Kalin. Amazing. That was one of my like childhood.
Dude, I mean, he's obviously well established in conservative circles, but through Twitter, I got to know Kevin Sorbo because I used to love the Hercules Legendary Journey shows when I was a kid. I thought that was a lot because I love Greek mythology. Some other fun ones, like other Twitter people. I mean, James Woods is one of the only people who on Twitter. I mean, I'm like, I'm agreeing with all of his tweets, but sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, that's like a curb stomp. Like, ah, like it hurts to watch that, you know? You know, they have some of those videos where like a gymnast will fall a certain way or something, and they just like, and you're just, or even more, skaters. A skater will, you know, hit the rail. And you just...
Or like those gym videos where they break an arm like mid-curl. Like
some of the James Woods tweets against the libs. I just felt bad for the libs. I was like, oh, man. He went rough in the paint. Like, that's a guy that threw some elbows back in the day. So anyway, Twitter used to be kind of fun.
There's so much talent on Twitter. There's so many people who are so good at Twitter that it is an amazing thing, definitely. You know what I mean?
I hope they bring it back and it gets to be fun like it used to be. It's got all these problems now, but we'll see. But... Chadwick will come back if it's fun. Maybe he'll make it fun. Where should everybody go to find your book?
Unfortunately, Amazon, I know a lot of people have a problem with that, but that's where it is. It wasn't my decision. So you go to Amazon. So you've been sent to diversity training. You can find my columns at spectatorworld.com or all things me on my website, chadwickmore.com.
Chadwick, you're a good man. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
You're the best, Buck. Thank you.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.